We appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow. We have Maria on Friday. She's chomping at the bit. I had a conversation with her last night. She's ready to rock and roll. And we are ready to do that on a daily basis, as you know. Take care and God bless you.
Hi, it's Steve Kirsch from the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. I'm here with Robert Jackson. Robert has been a rheumatologist for the past 35 years, and he's got a patient base tell me how big again? It's like 5 or 6,000 patients right now?
I think 5,000 would be an accurate conservative number. Yes, sir.
And over the 35 years, I imagine it's grown a little bit, but has it always been like, what's the minimum that it's been over the past 35 years?
Oh, it's always been at least that and more. I was just being conservative, so I wasn't overstating my position, but it's been serving the same area for decades.
Great. So you told me something that was quite extraordinary recently, and this is the reason that I wanted to do this on video, is that people could hear this directly from you so that there's no misinterpretation of what you told me. You told me, and correct me if I'm wrong, you told me that of your 5,000 patients, which is a lot of patients, it's large enough to be statistically significant. You said that what about 60% have been vaccinated?
Yes, conservatively, okay. Yes.
All right, so that's still a large number. That's around 3,000 people who've been vaccinated. So let's just talk about of those people who've been vaccinated, how many people, what percentage of those people who've been vaccinated, of the 3,000 of your patients who've been vaccinated, experienced adverse events reported to you, significant adverse events from the vaccine, not like a sore arm, but something that is impacted their lives that they were concerned about?
Yes, thank you for that. Give you a better perspective, I lead a company of over 100 doctors that provide outreach specialty services to rural areas of America. Of that 100 plus physicians, 40 are rheumatologists, and we specifically go to the rural communities. Their perspective on the virus and vaccination is somewhat different than metropolitan locations. But when I was doing this evaluation, I served 4 hospitals in South Central Iowa, and I do outreach services to 4 hospitals in North Central Missouri. And the thing that was the denominator, the percentage of those patients I just gave you, the 60% that were vaccinated, either on their first or second vaccination, they had a significantly impactful adverse reaction. Now, to clarify that, more than what you said, more than just a sore arm or some body aches, this was impactful enough that they could not report to work or
right.
Provide.
But what percentage of those? 1%, 10%, 50%?
40% of that population that got the vaccination. And so I was wondering if I was seeing, go ahead.
Okay. No, I just want to clarify this. This is very significant because the greatest number of patients I have heard in any population reporting significant adverse events was in a neurologist who reported significant adverse events in 5% of their patient base of the neurology, of the existing neurology clientele. So the point is that if you're a rheumatologist, so it's you're looking at people who have autoimmune disease. So if you vaccinate a person who's got autoimmune disease, it's not a 5% reaction rate, it is a 40% rate. Now, I think what's important is to describe is there are going to be some that are fairly severe in that 40%, and there are going to be some that are relatively mild and maybe go away. Of the 40% of the people who are of the people who are vaccinated, what percentage would you say are looks like they are have a long-term impact, meaning that they're still in pain or what have you?
I would say in the 5% range, and I was having the same experience. You were coming up with your great group that does the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation that studies the data that's coming in. And so I was wondering, am I seeing something different than being reported in the scientific media? And I just recently had found justification to what I was experiencing came out in our clinical rheumatology journal in March. And it was reflecting back on a report that was put out by EULAR, which is the European League of Rheumatologists. And they reported one of the biggest databases of over 5,100 patients. And they saw the similar adverse event after one or two vaccinations. 37% of those patients had an adverse reaction. And more, I think, particular to my practice was, we were seeing a flare-up of their pre-existing autoimmune disease or inflammatory arthritis, as well as, even more surprising, the development of a new onset development of autoimmune disease or inflammatory arthritis for the first time in their medical history.
And that would happen to what percent of the vaccinated patients?
About 5%, which is the same thing that the EULAR information came up with. And, you know, so I thought, well, then I am seeing this for real. And I was reviewing the literature as what type of autoimmune diseases were being, you know, manifest after vaccination and see if I was seeing anything different there. And mine was pretty much overlapping the same type of experience that they reported. The only thing I saw that was a little bit more prevalent was the development was called an antiphospholipid antibody syndrome.
Okay, and describe to us what that is.
It's a unique subset of patients that develop these antiphospholipid antibodies. And when they develop these antibodies, they're subject to become, have clot formations, have vascular thrombotic events, either arterial or venous. So you're talking about strokes, you're talking about heart attacks, deep venous thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, et cetera.
And this developed in what percentage of the vaccinated patients?
Well, the ones that came to my attention, about 5%, but the thing that's got my alarm signals up now is to screen patients. To screen patients.
In other words, this could be a silent killer.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know it's in 5%, but you haven't screened your entire patient base. So it could be significantly larger than the 5% who are reporting and that you then screened for.
So I think it's a great point. My idea to this is that I need to, before a patient asks for a booster at this juncture, or before they have initial vaccination, I'm going to recommend we screen for these antibodies before we give them a firm recommendation of whether they should even consider it, and give them some further, as you would say, basically informed consent at what their risk might be if they do this.
So did you advise your patients, who asked you, hey, should I get vaccinated?
Yes, in the first phase of it's rolled out, you know, we felt our patients were extremely vulnerable as immune compromised individuals.
So you advise patients, you advise them all to get vaccinated?
In the first few months of the release, yes, of the vaccine.
And then you started seeing side effects.
Well, that came out in the first part of 2020. And by the end of 2020, I saw concerns about the effectiveness of the vaccine.
You mean 2021? That's when the vaccine started.
Yeah, I mean 2021. And actually, we had a few of them out there at the very end of 2020. But in 2021, initially, towards the end of that, I started getting more concerns about the ineffectiveness of the vaccine, and patients were still coming down with infection, as well as complications related to the vaccination. Obviously, 40% were experiencing an adverse reaction, and some of a very serious consequence. And so I've changed my approach to my clinical practices to say, when they come back and say, should I get a booster? I'm saying, we should probably wait. This is still experimental, and I need some more data before I can give you a recommendation. Okay.
So you'd hardly be considered an anti-vaxxer.
Exactly.
Have you been vaccinated yourself?
Yes, I was. I was vaccinated in the early part of the release of the vaccines. Yes, sir.
Did you get the booster?
No booster.
Why didn't you get the booster? Because you saw the reaction from your patients?
I had the infection of COVID-19 in November of 2020, then I got vaccinated in the first few months of 2021.
Man, so I thought that was never gotten vaccinated, my friend.
I understand that now. Yes,
okay. You shouldn't have checked with me.
But there was incredible pressure, you know, on the hospitals I served that, you know, if you weren't vaccinated, you couldn't report to work type of challenges.
Question anybody on the science of that or the data? Like, you just said, oh, it must be true because all these health authorities are saying it's true, right?
Well, I had colleagues as well as patients that had their own personal trepidations. They were coming to me and asking me for advice how to avoid being vaccinated through legitimate means. And it was quite difficult. Most of them resorted to religious reasons why they wouldn't receive it, but they had own personal concerns. They did not want to be vaccinated.
Did you advise your patients to be vaccinated at the time, or did you say, hey, personal choice, and here's the pros and cons?
I'm totally for the autonomy of the patient. I support their decisions.
Right, right. But did you, when you advised them, if they asked you, you know, what do you recommend? You actually started recommending it at the very beginning because you thought they're compromised. So you're basically drinking the Kool-Aid just like I was.
Yes, exactly. That's where I was. And then as time went on, they came back and started talking about being boosted once or even twice after the initial two vaccinations. I'd say I would pause and take consideration.
Okay.
If they decided they were in too much fear, they wanted to move on, I wouldn't be prejudiced against them. I would just advise them to think about it.
You wouldn't call them an evil person.
Right.
So let me ask you this. Let's put that 40% number in context, because I want to compare that with other vaccine types. Like, you know, what are the reactions? So because people could listen to this and think like, 40%. I mean, maybe this is a rheumatology, you know, people who go to rheumatologists. So, you know, that they have autoimmune diseases. So maybe this is, you know, sort of a natural thing from other vaccines. Maybe you can compare this to your typical vaccine. So when you say we're looking at 3,000 vaccinated and 40% of those are, you know, reporting the event. So 1,200 of your patients, right? Because we took the 6,000, we took the 50, wait a minute. 6,000, you said percentage vaccinated was 60%?
Yes. Yes, sir.
You said 5,000 and 60% vaccinated, so that's 3,000. And then it's 40% of the 3,000, which would be 1,200 who are vaccine injured. This year, since the vaccine's rolled out slightly more than a year, 1,200 patients that reported an event. What would be the typical number of patients reporting an event, say, you know, 3 years ago?
Single digit percentage, you know, and that's why I thought, is it because of the unique nature of my population of patients? They are, you know, they're immune compromised. They're taking immune compromised medications. My concern was, am I doing something harmful because they're vulnerable?
All right. So single digit could be 9% or it could be 1%. Are we talking closer to 1%? Are we talking closer to 9% or are we talking somewhere
I would say right in the middle of 5%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the most. I mean, you know, the vaccine that comes to mind that I really have emphasized in the past for
70% off. That gets my attention. A quick anecdote here. I was on the road about a week and a half ago, and I was sorting out what's happening in some farmland in Pennsylvania, and speaking to some farmers and some of the plights that they are facing, etc. So I was in a remote area. And I was in this dingy truck stop, I won't name it, but it was a little bit of you would call it a shady place. And I'm sitting there, and they have scant Wi-Fi, but they did have some Wi-Fi. And I said, you know what, I don't even trust the coffee in this place, let alone the Wi-Fi. So let me dial up my IP Vanish account here on my good old cell phone. At least I know there's not prying eyes in the back in the back of the truck stop or anywhere else. And so we've used IP Vanish a number of times to bail us out of some sticky wickets, I guess you could call it, as we traveled across the United States and the pain caravan across the country. Tired of feeling like someone's always watching you on the internet. Maybe advertisers know a bit too much about you, or you're concerned about the privacy of your identity. Using incognito mode won't solve the problem either. IP Vanish VPN is here to protect your right to privacy and help you stay anonymous online. IP Vanish helps you safely browse the internet without exposing your private details to third parties such as hackers, your ISP, or advertisers. You can use IP Vanish on your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick And when you're streaming media, when you use IPVanish, all of your data is encrypted. This means that your private details, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be completely shielded from falling into the wrong hands. Even your physical location will be hidden. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. It's that simple. And you can use IPVanish or unlimited uses on unlimited devices without sacrificing on speed. Your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick. IPVanish is offering an incredible 70% off their yearly plan for our listeners with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's like getting 9 months for free for you folks who need a little help with the math. IPVanish is super easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're instantly protected. You won't even know what's on. Stop sharing with the world everything you watch, everything you search for, and everything you buy. Take your privacy back today with the brand rated 4.6 out of 5 on Trustpilot. So go to IPVanish.com/pain, that's P-A-I-N-E, and use promotional code PAIN, all in caps, P-A-I-N-E, and claim your 70% savings. That's IPVanish.com/pain.
Has been the herpes zosters, the Shingrix vaccine. Now, when I say their adverse event, it's more the tune like I've got a really sore arm. And so my advice to those patients who got a shingles vaccination, which are drugs that are usually recommended, you do have herpes zoster updated vaccination. I'd say, well, make sure you put it in your non-dominant arm, because that arm you get your second shot in, you're probably not going to be functional with.
Right. So that's a pretty minor event, and but it's still, you know, it's we're comparing the 5% versus the 40%, so you're still eight times that level, and you're not going to see 5% every single year, are you? Is that's in like your worst year? Like in a good year, you'll see what, 1 or 2%, or
exactly.
And that, okay, so this is more like 20 times what you'd expect to see from a normal vaccine. In terms of an apples to apples comparison of a comparable set of adverse events.
Yeah, the first thing that caught my ear when working with my patient population was, as well as my colleagues, they would say to me that they had the time, the day of the week that they received their, especially their second messenger RNA vaccination for COVID-19, because they would invariably knock them out of commission for days. And they didn't want to miss days from work or miss any income or lose vacation time. And so that's different. I haven't heard that before with other vaccination process. So that was the first thing I got my thinking more about it. And then I saw this population, the 5% I mentioned, that they just didn't recover from their vaccination adverse event experience. And they were still struggling months later. And now I've got patients that are out there 6 months to a year. They say they're still not right.
Right. So has that ever happened before in any other previous vaccine? Zero.
Not that duration. Maybe
35 years. Never seen anything like this in 35 years.
Not where they come in and they still blame that shot for making their life miserable.
So would it be fair to say that you consider this the most dangerous or from a side effect point of view, a vaccine that you have ever seen in your career?
Yes, certainly. I mean, reflect back to the one I thought was the worst in my career history was probably the swine flu vaccine. And, you know, their adverse event was a fraction compared to what we're reporting now.
Okay. Now that we have access to. This is important because swine flu vaccine was stopped.
I know.
It was too deadly to use.
Exactly. And it was only what was the number of casualties that they had case related deaths?
Like, you know, 50, it's on 50, order 50, of 50.
50 to most or less.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is, this vaccine makes that vaccine look like rounding error.
Exactly.
Order magnitude, more than order magnitude?
Yes.
Okay.
Now remember that, I'm a specialist of internal medicine, so I'm not the primary care provider for these individuals. I'm their specialist. And so I'm not usually the one involved at the moment they're receiving their vaccines, either through health departments or through their local hospitals and clinics. I get this message to me when they come back to me in follow-up, and I always ask them.
Dr. Fauci, whether you ask for it or not, you've sort of been the government's face on a response to the pandemic. Looking back, and I recognize that, hindsight is crystal clear, but looking back, do you think it was worth it? Do you think the benefits were greater than the costs of closing down our elementary and secondary schools?
I think that's very difficult to give a definitive answer to that. I know in the very beginning, when we had really no other protection prior to vaccinations that were available to contain somewhat the spread of the virus, one of the things that was felt to be important would be to protect children as well as the rest of the population. Right now, we have felt more than just recently that it's very important to keep the children in school for the simple reason that we know of the deleterious effects, both psychologically, mentally, and developmentally in children, to keep them out of school. But you have to have a delicate balance between protecting the children from getting infected and perhaps bringing
it. Did we strike the proper balance?
You know, I believe that we have. It's very tough to tell. I think only time will tell whether that's the case, because there is indication that has been deleterious effects on children. But we believe from a public health standpoint that at the time it was the right decision.
Well, can I ask you this, Doctor? And I realize I'm not saying or offering a judgment on what was done at the time. I'm asking what we've learned. Let's suppose we had a substantial increase in prevalence of the coronavirus next week, God forbid.
Right.
Would CDC recommend shutting down the elementary and secondary schools?
It's very difficult for me to speak for the CDC, but knowing the fact that
would you recommend it?
Right now, I would do everything we can to keep the children in school and not shut down the school. And that has always been my strong recommendation, to the extent possible, not to keep the children out of school,
but to keep them
safely in school by A, getting children that are available to be vaccinated, right, to get the children who are eligible to be boosted vaccinated, and to surround the children with teachers and personnel in the school who are vaccinated. That is the best way to protect the children while keeping them in school.
Okay. Let me ask you this. In hindsight, knowing what you know now, had you known it then, did we do the right thing in shutting down society? Would we have been better off saying, no, we're going to protect the vulnerable, the elderly, the people who are immunocompromised, and we're going to isolate them, but have the rest of American society, churches, businesses, universities, schools, go on about their business, while at the same time providing them guidance about how to protect themselves?
Well, it's a complicated question. I'll try and give as simple an answer as possible. I think there's a misperception about who the vulnerable are. There are many, many more vulnerables in society, and there's a misperception that
Yes, but I'm about to run out of time. Let's assume that we can agree on a definition.
I don't think you can. I think that society is very heterogeneous, and it isn't a question of shutting down completely, Senator, because we never shut down completely. If you do shut down a society, you do it for a purpose. And the purpose is at that period of time when you're protecting people from interaction that you get as many people vaccinated as you possibly can.
Let me stop.
To shut down.
I'm going to run out of time. Let me ask you one last
sure.
question. What would you do differently today?
Right now, I would hope that we would get many more people vaccinated.
No, but what would you do when you did it, in hindsight, if you knew then what you know today?
So I've gotten asked on the show, hey, what do you used to do for Citibank? You're always talking about Citibank and the time you spent at Citibank. I said, well, I did a lot of things for Citibank. And one of the things people seem to be intrigued by was a program that was for celebrities and very well-to-do folks. It was kidnapping insurance. And we had a vault in New York City that I was responsible for that at any time always contained $10 million cash. And I had to make sure that it always had $10 million cash and that none of the cash went missing in case folks needed ransom money. So that's among many other things and billions of dollars that came across my desk at Citi. So I know a good bank from a bad bank and a good deal from a good deal. And so I'm really excited to have found this bank, Axos Bank, that opened on Independence Day in 2000. They're not a crumbling brick and mortar. They're fully digital bank built on the bedrock of American traditions. Take a look at their rewards checking account where you can earn their highest interest rate. And it's a big one. And listeners here can get $150 if you open it by July 31st. Big rewards from a bank that believes in the freedom to do business without compromising our values. Amazing, right? Go to axosbank.com/pain for full details. That's Axos, A-X-O-S, bank.com/pain. And for that cash bonus, you only need a $1,500 direct deposit within the first 3 months of opening your rewards checking account. Axos is federally insured, member FDIC, and they're for us, all of us. axosbank.com/pain. Go check them out.
It depends on when we got the vaccine. Do you mean before the availability of vaccine? Before the ability of vaccine, when we had no other situation, I would try to protect people by making sure that they masked and they kept themselves separated from this congregate indoor settings. That's what I would do in the absence of a vaccine. But right now, I think it's important. Looking forward, we still only have 66% of the total population vaccinated, and less than half of those are boosted. I think we can approach what we are likely going to be seeing on our seeing now with an increase in surges, with the possibility of a surge in the fall and winter. One of the real things we can all do as a nation is pull together and try to get our people vaccinated and those who are eligible to be boosted, boosted. That would solve a lot of the problems that you're referring to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Dr. Tabak. I am posing the first question to you for an update on...
Some of y'all never been down south too much. Some of y'all never been down south too much. I'm going to tell you a little story so that you'll understand what I'm talking about. Down there we have a plant that grows out in the woods in the fields, and it looks something like a turnip green. Everybody calls it poke salad. Now that's poke salad. Used to know a girl lived down there, and she'd go out in the evenings and pick a mess of it, carry it home and cook it for supper, because that's about all they had to eat. But they did all right. Down in Louisiana, where the alligators grow so mean, lived a girl that I swear to the world made the alligators look tame. Oh, salad Annie. Got your granny. Everybody said it was a shame, because her mama was a working on the chain gang. A mean, the vicious woman. Every day before supper time, she'd go down by the truck patch and pick her a mess of pork salad and carry it home in a toast sack. Pork salad, honey, you've got your granny. Everybody said it was a shame, because the mama wasn't working on the chain gang. A wretched, spiteful, straight razor toting woman. Lord have mercy. You sock a little pork salad to me. So what? Daddy was lazy and no count, claimed he had a bad back. All her brothers were fit for stealing watermelons out of my truck. Pork salad, Annie, you just got your granny. Everybody said it was a shame, because her mama was a working on the chain gang. You suck a little pork salad to me. You know what needs me a mess. Suck a little. A little pork salad to me. You know what need me a mess. Suck a little pork salad. You know what need me a mess. Ching ching a ching ching. Ching ching a ching ching a ling a ling. Ching ching a ching ching a ling. Ching ching a ching ching. 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 Ching ching.